32nd Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, returned to the USDA for the second time at the beginning of the Biden administration. I was privileged to first meet him during his 8 years as Secretary of Agriculture under President Obama, and then to get to know him even better when he continued to serve agriculture by working with our dairy farmers. Our friendship has grown over these 2 years as we talked regularly about pressing issues facing America's farmers and ranchers. And I appreciate that he reaches out to Farm Bureau when USDA is considering important policy. When Secretary Vilsack's leadership, USDA is working to ensure our food supply is safe and secure for all Americans. He's expanded markets for farmers and ranchers, and he's helping to make our food system more resilient and competitive. Secretary Vilsack is committed to bring farmers and ranchers to the table, and he has been a strong advocate for recognizing our sustainability achievements both at home and on the global stage. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Secretary of Agriculture, the Honorable Tom Vilsack.
Well, Zippy, thank you very, very much for that kind introduction, and as importantly, for the friendship that has been developed over the course of a number of years. I have really learned a lot from President Duvall and continue to reach out to him from time to time on issues of importance. So I appreciate the introduction today, and I certainly appreciate being here today in Puerto Rico to visit with the Farm Bureau family. I really thought a lot about these remarks today because I know how important this group is to American agriculture and to the country. So I want to tell you that my speech is really set up in four parts: an acknowledgement, a concern, a report of sorts of what we're doing, and an expression of appreciation. Let me start with the acknowledgement. What an incredible, resilient group the American farmer and rancher and producer is. When you think about the challenges that you all have faced in the recent past, it is absolutely remarkable of your ability to continue to produce. I mean, think about it. Climate change and weather providing severe disruption to our capacity to produce. Whether it's mega droughts in the West and forest fires that ravage cropland, or terrific storms or derechos in the Midwest, or hurricanes here in Puerto Rico. The reality is, you all have continued to produce. Think about the fact that you're dealing still today with the challenges that COVID presented, and pointing out the challenges and disruption of the agriculture industry. The fact that your world was turned upside down when Russia made the invasion of Ukraine because it disrupted our capacity to receive important inputs like fertilizer. Through it all, you still continue to produce. And you produce in a market that oftentimes finds you with limited market opportunities. It's an incredible story of resilience. The last 2 years have been the two best years in farm income, probably in the history of this country. American farmers responded to the challenge a number of years ago to continue to produce more, not just for our needs here in the U.S., but also for the needs around the world. Farmers increased their productivity by relying on technology, looking for ways to become more efficient, and increasing the size of their operations. And despite the fact that we've had the two best years of farm income, here's the reality, and here's the concern. This is from an ERS report recently, in which it quotes, "In recent years, notwithstanding the increase in income. Around half of farm households had negative farm income. And just today, ERS issued a report in which it shows that for most U.S. farm families, off-farm income is the main source of income. When I think about the challenges you faced, the extraordinary productivity that you've been engaged in, and the fact that a significant percentage of farmers yet today, even in the face of record income, face challenges, it takes me back to a quote that is one of my favorite quotes from President Lincoln, who established the Department of Agriculture in 1862. At that perilous time in our country's history, the president said, "The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise to the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew." And so I'm here today to talk a bit about thinking anew, of how we might be able to make American agriculture not just the most productive in the world as it is, but also profitable not for many, but for all. Not sustainable for some, but for all. Not resilient for some, but for all. Over the last 2 years, we've begun a process of putting in place a plan of action to try to focus American agriculture on productivity, profitability, sustainability, and resilience. We've looked at ways to create new and more valuable commodities so that farmers can benefit more from the markets that exist. We've looked for ways to increase new and better markets for our farmers so that we can create competition. We've looked for ways in which we can encourage and increase the number of revenue streams available to farmers so that they not only can benefit from the sale of crops or the sale of livestock, but that they have other additional revenue streams available to them. We looked for ways in which we could lower costs of inputs, and we looked for ways in which we could continue to keep farmers, ranchers, and producers on the land. We've created efforts to add value to commodities that reward farmers, ranchers, and producers. We've provided financial support for more new and better markets. We've promoted U.S. production of key imports, and we've expanded disaster assistance for a number of farmers, including limited resource farmers. Let me give you a couple of examples of things we've done with the assistance and help of the Farm Bureau. Listening to farmers, we knew that if we were to engage farmers in climate-smart agriculture and forestry practices, we have to create a program that was voluntary, incentive-based, market-driven, with strong monitoring, measuring, verification, reporting requirements. The Farm Bureau led an effort with the farm and food industry, creating the structure and system that we used in establishing our Climate Smart Agriculture and Forestry Commodity Partnership Initiative. We're investing $3 billion in 141 projects involving operations of all sizes, all producer groups, all commodities. Commodities produced with climate smart practices and linking them to market opportunities where farmers and ranchers and producers using those practices will receive a higher value for their work, a value that is produced by market principles. We've seen extraordinary partnerships developed here, including the Farm Bureau, with environmental groups and conservation groups and universities, with food companies, with retailers, all designed to create an opportunity for farmers, ranchers, and producers to benefit. These opportunities will not only create a higher value commodity, but they'll also allow farmers to qualify on a voluntary basis for the benefits of ecosystem markets, a new revenue stream. It'll lead to more productive soil, cleaner water, and more efficient use of those important resources. And it will provide more and new ingredients for a broad range of bio-based products, bringing not just additional income sources for farmers, but also creating new and better-paying rural jobs. An example of that is sustainable aviation fuel. So that's an example of thinking anew with the benefit and direction and advice of folks from Farm Bureau. You all came to us and said it's really difficult for many farmers, ranchers, and producers when they're confronted with a single market, especially livestock producers, where the competition is so limited. So we went about the process of using resources through the USDA of expanding meat and poultry processing. We announced 266 plants and assisted them in expanding their sales beyond just selling in-state to interstate sales. We announced recently 22 plants in the first tranche of grants to build expanded and new processing facilities. And today, here at the Farm Bureau Convention, we announced three additional projects that we're benefiting. We're going to fund and help the International Food System of Ohio develop a new poultry processing facility in Ohio to expand significantly their capacity to produce new product. More capacity, more demand, and more good-paying jobs. We're going to provide additional resources to the Michigan Turkey Producers Group in order for them to be able to increase the capacity of their existing facility by 370,000 birds annually and allow them over time potentially to double their capacity to nearly 10 million birds being processed. And we're going to provide resources to Benson and Turner, which is a new hog and beef processing facility in Minnesota associated with the Wright Earth Indian Reservation, to provide new opportunities as well. Each of these projects, as well as the other 22 projects and more projects to come over the course of the next several months, will provide additional competition for Farm Bureau members, additional value-added opportunity for producers, and again, more jobs in rural communities. So we're excited about this opportunity for better bargains and better choices for consumers and better income for farmers. And we think, based on the success of this initiative, that we will also see during the first 6 months of this year an expansion of this concept and idea to providing resources for non-meat and poultry processing, which also should provide assistance and help to Farm Bureau members. More new and better markets also involved an establishment of an organic transition assistance program, making it easier and less expensive for those who want to take advantage of that value-added opportunity. We have established 6 regional centers with 150 partners to make it easier for people to understand and appreciate the steps necessary. And we're also going to use resources to create more market opportunities so that we can better balance supply and demand. We're strengthening and expanding local and regional food systems as well, creating regional food business centers across the country to make it easier for those who are interested in establishing the opportunity for farm to school, farm to grocery store, farm to restaurant, farm to institutional purchaser to be able to do so. And for the first time, we're really using federal procurement capacity, the opportunity that we have at the USDA to purchase food, to be able to use it to maybe better link opportunities for local and regional producers. So that's an example of more new and better markets and thinking anew. In the area of inputs, when Russia invaded Ukraine, it obviously made a significant impact on the availability of fertilizer. The President announced a $500 million commitment last year, and we've been in the process of listening again to Farm Bureau members and folks around the country on what we might be able to do in the short term and in the long term to create greater capacity, greater independence, if you will, greater self-reliance in terms of these valuable inputs. What we received back from all of you was that there was a need to address the immediacy of the 2023-2024 crop year, while also taking a look at longer-term capacity issues. So we divided the $500 million commitment into 2 grant programs, and we solicited inputs and applications in each of those 2 tranches. Later this spring, we'll make announcements concerning the larger scale projects, but today we're basically posting and providing a list of 21 potential viable projects that we've identified that would potentially have an opportunity to impact the availability and potentially the cost of important inputs and fertilizer during the 2023-2024 crop year. These 21 potential viable projects will focus approximately $88 million of the request of the $500 million program. We wanted to make sure that in establishing this initiative, that we focused on independently owned entities, focused on entities that would make product in America, that would focus on next-gen and innovative approaches, that would be sustainable, and most importantly of all, would be farmer-focused. To make sure that we're hitting the mark, we're making these 21 potential viable projects public today and soliciting public comment, any concerns or issues that folks may have, as we are conducting the environmental reviews before making the final announcements. But we think that there's an opportunity here to have an impact, to send a strong message about the desire on the part of the Department of Agriculture to make sure that we are self-reliant when it comes to basic inputs. I think you'll see projects that are innovative, using food waste, manure conversion as feedstocks, projects that involve greater efficiency in the use of fertilizer, opportunities to expand the equipment of existing facilities so that they can produce more, operating new opportunities in biochar, and a variety of other innovative approaches. So we're excited about this opportunity to begin the process of reducing reliance on those who do not agree with us for valuable inputs to ensure that we continue to be productive. So new sources of income, new market opportunities, reduced input costs based on made in America. We understand and appreciate that it's also important to reflect on the fact that natural disasters have occurred, sometimes with greater frequency, but for sure with greater velocity and fierceness. No place in the country understands that better than where we're having this convention today. That's why it's important for us to continue our work on ensuring that the disaster assistance that's available to folks gets to all the farmers in need. As you know, the Congress basically appropriated $10 billion to the Department of Agriculture under the Emergency Relief Program, which was designed and focused on qualified disaster assistance for disasters that occurred in calendar year 2020 and 2021. About $7 billion of that resource has already been distributed to farmers across the country. Today, we announced the second installment of relief for crop loss, for milk loss, for loss of farm-stored crops, for crops prevented from planting in operations that did not have the benefit of crop insurance or NAP coverage. Producers who didn't qualify for assistance under those programs, they were left out of the initial phase one emergency provisions. But today we're announcing a program that's targeted towards those producers. We're going to fill in the gaps. We're going to make sure that as they do, we're encouraging them to think about the notion and the importance of signing up for crop insurance and for NAP coverage. We know that folks expressed and experienced a decrease in revenue, but sometimes it's difficult when you have a program that requires you to compare your income before a disaster to after a disaster or during a disaster. So we're providing flexibility in this second phase. For those who received a decrease of income and revenue in 2020 and 2021, we're giving them an option of choosing either 2018 or 2019 as the year to benchmark the extent of loss. We'll be publishing a tool making it easier for individuals to determine the extent of relief under this phase two program of the Emergency Relief Program. We're also, as a companion, announcing a new pandemic assistance revenue program for producers who experienced a 15% or greater decrease in gross revenue in 2020 compared to 2018 or 2019. And this program is designed, again, to fill in gaps that weren't necessarily covered by the phase one or phase two of the Emergency Relief Plan. It may be that there's an individual operation that just began. Unfortunately, a new beginning farmer got started in 2020 and then was hit with a disaster and doesn't have the kind of information that would allow a comparison. So we're creating this new pandemic assistance revenue program to assist those farmers in staying in business and staying on the land. We'll be publishing a rule with the eligibility requirements in the very near future. We're also announcing an update to the NAEP program. We understand as we listen to farmers across the country, including farmers here in Puerto Rico, that they've had a challenge of accessing some of these programs. They have a challenge of understanding and appreciating the importance of these programs. While they may be a beginning farmer or a veteran farmer, a limited resource farmer, a socially disadvantaged farmer, they may not have been in a position to take advantage of some of these programs. So we're creating an opportunity with an update to NAEP that's going to allow folks who have filed the CCC 860 form, which is the form that designates you as a beginning, veteran, limited resource, or socially disadvantaged farmer, as being eligible for NAEP beginning in 2022. That's going to provide some basic coverage to those farmers. And we're also announcing for farmers who have been struggling as underserved producers an additional increase in the CFAP program. So all of this is designed to create an opportunity for us to allow folks to stay on the farm, because that's part of the plan in terms of changing and thinking anew, trying to get to a point where American agriculture is not only incredibly productive, but it's profitable for all, it's sustainable for all, and resilient for all. Let me finish by saying that we're provided with a tremendous opportunity to not only expand on these opportunities with the Inflation Reduction Act resources under the conservation title of that historic act, but also during the course of the discussions about our Farm Bill. And I understand and appreciate that there's been a conversation here at Farm Bureau about the importance of that Farm Bill, the need to educate new members of Congress about its importance, and certainly appreciate the acknowledgement that it will be important and necessary for us to continue to link the nutrition aspect of the Farm Bill and the other aspects of the Farm Bill together in order to ensure the best chance of getting a Farm Bill in 2023. What do we want to do with the Farm Bill? What do we want to do with all these programs? We want to create a vibrant and resilient rural economy. We want to create the opportunity for farmers not just to depend on a commodity market that can change on a whim, to be able to have 3, 4, 5, or 6 different profit centers operating out of their farm, to create from those profit centers processing jobs and manufacturing jobs in rural communities, so that you all are in a position to do what you want to do most of all, which is to continue to farm and to be able to say to the next generation and the next generation that they too can have the same opportunity. Now, that's not only important for all of you, it's important for the rest of America as well. I've said this before to Farm Bureau groups, I'm going to say it again. The reality is everybody in the United States of America owes farmers and ranchers and producers an extraordinary debt, a debt of gratitude. Think about what you do for the rest of us. Every day we wake up to an economy that's the strongest in the world. Why is it the strongest? Because it's extraordinarily diverse. Why is it diverse? Because we're a food secure nation. We're not a nation that has to depend on somebody else providing us the food to feed our people. We do it ourselves. In fact, we do such a good job of it that we can feed the rest of the world as well. That's a tremendous advantage from an economic and a national security perspective. What you've done is created a foundation of an economy that allows a significant percentage of America to pursue other opportunities, in my case, to be a lawyer, in my wife's case, to be a teacher. We could not have done that if we didn't have farmers, ranchers, and producers making sure that we could feed our family every single day by simply going to the grocery store. We should be incredibly appreciative of that. In addition, you are also part of an industry that is the largest employer in the country. Nearly 20% of America's workforce is connected in some way, shape, or form to the food and agriculture industry. So there are literally millions of people whose jobs depend on what you do every single day. You are the folks who provide extraordinary capacity for America to export not just food products, but something about the American brand, a brand of excellence, a brand of being able to count on American agriculture to be able to supply adequately the needs of other countries. It's an extraordinary story. And so many in rural communities also send their sons and daughters disproportionately into the military service. So you see, a farm bill isn't just about farms, and it isn't just about nutrition, and it isn't just about conservation. It's about preserving a fundamental aspect of our country, of being a food secure nation that empowers the rest of the nation to do all of what we do in America. So the future of our country is directly connected to your future. And as the Secretary of Agriculture, it's always difficult to know that some are doing incredibly well, and we're thankful for that. But to know that 50% or more of our farm families had negative farm income in a time of record farm profits suggests to me that we need to do more. We need to create more opportunities, more revenue streams, more markets, more help. And that's what the Farm Bill discussion, in my view, needs to be about. So I appreciate the opportunity, appreciate the friendship, appreciate what you do for my family.